Here I am in the offices of the Transgender Law Centre in downtown San Francisco. I guess if there was going to be somewhere where an organisation like this might exist, then San Francisco would be it. But even here, the transgender rights revolution is a relatively recent development. I have with me Mason Davis, who's the executive director, and Christina Wirtz, who's the legal director. And I'm going to start by asking them to tell me a little bit about when the organisation was founded, how it came to be, and the general purpose, well, what its mission is, to use the correct business speak. Mason, would you like to start?
Sure. Well, the Transgender Law Center started in 2002 as a project of the National Center for Lesbian Rights, one of the premier legal organizations doing work to protect the rights of folks based on sexual orientation throughout the United States. And they were seeing at the time that there were increasing needs for transgender people to get good legal support at an affordable and free rate, and also to start doing more transgender-specific policy work to change some of the institutional barriers that face a lot of transgender people in California. We became an independent organization in 2005 and are now a fully staffed organization advocating for the civil rights of transgender people throughout California. We do free legal support and impact about 1,000 people a year through our advice and counsel legal program. We do more direct representation for about 10 to 15% of those clients. And then we do a whole host of programs to transform institutions in California to make sure that they are able to adequately support transgender youth and adults. So that oftentimes includes work around healthcare access, immigration, safe schools, safe bathrooms, good economic development, workforce programs, and a whole host of other issues that impact transgender people.
Okay, I'd certainly like to come back to the sort of work that you do later in the interview, but I think with any organization like this, one of the things that transgender people like to know is that it's actually being operated by people who understand them rather than people who are merely sympathetic or think that helping trans people is something they ought to do. So could you tell us a little bit about the nature of the organization and the people who work for it?
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, the Transgender Law Center was started by a non-transgender gay man who was in law school at the time and saw that there was this whole area of law that hadn't been really undeveloped. So Chris Daly and Dylan Bade, who was a transgender man, came together to create TLC under a lot of the mentorship of Shannon Minter, a transgender man at NCLR at the time. At this point, we have 6 staff at TLC, and 5 of those are transgender identified. I myself am a transgender man and transitioned about 10 years ago. Christina Wirtz is our only non-transgender staff at the moment. Otherwise, we've got a board that's about 60% transgender and about 40% allies. So it's a pretty diverse organization, but it's very important to us that the voice of transgender people determine where we go, what we do. And, you know, it's really exciting that we now have a transgender organization that's growing and run predominantly by transgender people.
And equally, as I understand it from the conference we had a couple of weeks back, when you say transgender, you mean the entire transgender umbrella.
We do. We have a very broad definition of transgender here, you know, representing anyone whose gender identity is a little bit different than the stereotypes associated with their sex at birth. And so, you know, that means that we've got a pretty broad interpretation, and we work with everyone from transsexuals who are dealing with their identity documents or dealing with immigration issues to masculine lesbian in a high school who's not allowed to walk through graduation because she's not willing to wear a dress. So we look at the whole range of gender identity and expression.
Okay, that's great. Now, you're based here in California, and most people probably outside the USA would assume that that makes you a US organization and you'd be working for people all over the country. But as I understand it, it's not quite that easy, is it? The legal system in the United States is really quite complicated.
Yeah, I mean, as a result, we were founded to be a California organization. So based in San Francisco, most of our work takes place within the state of California. We have a couple of projects that are national in scope, Right now, Christine is working on an immigration practice guide for attorneys who are working with transgender immigrants or asylum seekers. And we receive requests from certainly throughout the United States and oftentimes around the world as transgender people are trying to figure out what their rights are or need assistance to make sure that their civil rights are respected. And we certainly get a lot of requests and questions about immigration asylum from the rest of the world.
Okay. But California law is different from the law in other states. For example, the whole question of birth certificates is different. Is that right?
That's true. The law around birth certificates is a state law issue, generally speaking. Laws around employment discrimination is, as most people know, the United States doesn't have a federal law protecting transgender folks from employment discrimination, but many states, including California, do, but there is some variation among states there. Issues around ability to marry, family recognition, custody rights, there's all kinds of things that are state law issues.
So as far as transgender people in the U.S. is concerned, then which state they live in is very important as to the type of rights they're going to have.
Absolutely.
Okay, so can now we look at some of the work that you're doing for American citizens? Mason mentioned some of the areas that you cover, and it seems to be a fairly wide spectrum. Obviously, you can't talk about individual cases, but could you perhaps give some examples of the sorts of work that you've covered?
Sure. Yes, you're right on. The term transgender law is a very broad scope, and so what we're looking at are ways that transgender people interact with the legal system that may be unique. So, for example, we see a hugely disproportional rate of employment discrimination against transgender folks. So we often help people to either communicate with their employers, educate their employers when they're facing an employment discrimination situation, or bring a complaint either directly through the complaint process that their employer has in place or a state or local administrative agency, and then sometimes even going to court and filing a lawsuit on someone's behalf if the employment discrimination isn't resolved in those sort of more informal ways. We have seen some real strides in San Francisco around employment discrimination, that being, you know, really something that is integral to the community as a need, and we're seeing less and less complaints in San Francisco, but statewide and nationally, it's still a huge issue. You mentioned immigration a few times, and I realize that you have an international audience here, so that's something that is incredibly important. We have just recently won a wonderful victory on behalf of a transgender woman from Brazil. She was able to have her deportation order withheld, and that means she was able to stay in the United States and apply for working papers. She had gone through just tremendous abuse and torture at the hands of the police in Rio de Janeiro. We see, you know, way too many transgender folks, particularly transgender Latina women in the San Francisco Bay Area, who have faced just horrendous abuse and torture in their home countries, and we do our best to help them out in seeking asylum here.
Yeah, I'm disappointed to hear that this was from Brazil. I mean, you tend to assume that that's one of the South American countries where attitudes towards transgender people are slightly less unpleasant, but clearly it goes on everywhere, and presumably you get people from all over the world.
We do. We hear from people from all over the world, absolutely.
So, you know, if there are people from Africa or China or wherever, then there is a possibility of coming to America. It seems, you know, development from the Ellis Island idea that if you're poor, you come to America and make it. But maybe if you're transgendered, you can come to America and get a better life.
That's really the hope. And San Francisco really is Mecca for a lot of transgender folks. And there are a lot of social services here. There's a very viable community here. And, you know, down in Southern California as well. So we do our best to make sure that people who find their way here through whatever course of life are able to stay here and become documented workers and able to thrive.
Coming back to the national legal issues for a moment, one of the things that's causing a lot of problems for transgender people all over the world is the issue of identity cards. Now, I understand there are issues with the national government, but also San Francisco has decided to issue its own identity card. Is that right?
They have. They have. Supervisor Tom Amiano, who is on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, has started an initiative and passed an ordinance to grant identification cards with a little bit less documentation than what is required to get a state-issued identification card. One unique thing about these cards is that they aren't going to include a gender marker at all.
Okay, well, that certainly sounds to be very useful. Now, we've talked a bit about you helping people through the existing legal process, but clearly there is a long way to go for transgendered people in terms of changing existing laws so that they're no longer discriminated against. How does the balance of your work shift between using the existing laws and trying to create new ones?
Well, we divide our programs into two main channels. And one is our community legal services program, where we're doing a lot of the direct legal assistance and working with other attorneys to make sure that we have attorneys throughout the state who are prepared to represent transgender clients very well. And then we have another program area called Transforming Institutions. And that's where we really look at some of the bias that exists at different types of institutions around the state and country and figure out what the best ways are to intercede and to start changing those institutions so that they better meet the needs of transgender people. So as part of that, we use a multidisciplinary approach to address those challenges. In some situations, it's a matter of looking at the laws that are already there and helping to implement those. So looking at administrative channels to make change or to do community building and community organizing to mobilize other community members in local areas to help make sure that their institutions are friendly, especially when they are able to take advantage of existing law. Some places we don't have policy, and in those situations we will work with other partners around the state to help create and pass new laws, such as the 2006 insurance gender non-discrimination law in California to reinforce that people shouldn't be discriminated against because of their gender in the provision of insurance. And that's, for us, a really important piece to increase the number of transgender people who are covered by private insurance, because in the United States, that's really the way that most people access or are able to pay for their health care. In that situation, we've got now a law in the books that we're able to help pass, and now we have to help implement that. So we do that through various strategies, and some of that is around, you know, our use of the law and figuring out what some of the best cases are to help put kind of some good case law on, you know, as a standard to make sure that future people are able to take advantage of the law. So we certainly work on it, you know, everywhere from the community organizing level to the policy level to kind of backing things up through our legal work.
Is that liable to lead to people being able to claim for gender reassignment surgery on health insurance?
Well, right now we have a problem that a lot of people are not able to get in private insurance, period, if they're transgender. So we receive calls from people throughout California who are self-employed and have applied to get private insurance, and they get a letter back saying that because they have a diagnosis of gender identity disorder or because they've been on hormones, they were going to be denied any kind of primary care insurance. And so that, for us, is a big deal, because even if they have a heart attack or diabetes, they're not able to get insurance to cover those costs. So that's part of what we're looking at, is just making sure everybody has access to care. You know, I think then the deeper level is how do we get transition-related care covered? And so we're looking at different strategies to do that. Right now, the University of California and some other in the city of San Francisco both cover transition-related care in their insurance policies, and we want to do everything that we can to expand that to become the norm.
There is a transgender-specific medical service in San Francisco, I believe.
We have a couple, actually, where we've got like the Tom Waddell Clinic and Lyon Martin Clinic, places that now provide transgender specialty care and set aside a certain number of hours specifically for the transgender community. We found that a lot of transgender people don't feel comfortable accessing even basic primary care, much less hormones, from traditional providers, oftentimes because a lot of people experience discrimination or harassment in healthcare settings, and because many times their insurance will not cover hormones and they don't think to go to the doctor to get those then. And so by having a specialty time set aside, we're able to get a lot of people to go in and actually take, you know, get actual prescriptions for hormones, monitor their blood levels and make sure that everything's going well. And we're encouraging now other clinics throughout the state to provide similar clinics.
And indeed, presumably, you've also got people who understand the issues.
Absolutely. I mean, just understanding transgender people and the diversity of transgender bodies and experiences is so important. And if you have somebody, you know, everybody's vulnerable when they go to the doctor. And to have somebody then ask you inappropriate questions or treat you like a guinea pig or lab rat is not helpful. And so to have somebody who gets it, who understands transgender bodies and lives, is just incredibly helpful for people.
Okay, well, it sounds like things are going reasonably well for transgendered people, at least in California, and hopefully beyond that into the rest of the United States as well. How do you see the future development of your organization?
Well, I will say first, I mean, we still have so much work to do. We did a survey in 2006 in the city of San Francisco and found that only 25% of transgender adults were working full-time. So we still have incredibly high rates of discrimination, very high rates of harassment against transgender people throughout California. And so I want to say, while this is definitely the best state to be in if you're a transgender person, the challenges facing transgender people are still very persistent. So we still have a lot of work to do and a lot of work ahead of us. We need to take advantage of the fact that we do have good laws now and good policies in California. We need to make sure those are implemented. And so that's a lot of the work that we're doing now in local communities and throughout the state to hold the institutions accountable for the laws that are there. We also need to make sure that the protections that we have in California are able to extend out to other parts of the United States. That's why having an Employment Non-Discrimination Act in Washington, D.C. that protects transgender people is very important for us. So we anticipate that the needs and the, you know, especially the awareness of needs of the transgender community continue to grow. We need to grow to keep up with that and make sure that we're there advocating for our communities.
There is very much an issue here, isn't there, that it's all very well having a law on the statute books, but if people don't respect that law, then it's not going to be obeyed. It's a bit like, you know, speeding tickets. It's against the law, but everybody does it, and it's still against the law to discriminate against transsexuals, but if everybody does it, then that doesn't necessarily make life any better for people.
That's right. We have to change the laws, but then we have to make sure that they're actually implemented, and we need to work to change the culture. So that discrimination or stigma against transgender people is just, you know, it becomes something that's just really outmoded, right? That's out of date, and where the standard is treating people well, regardless of their gender identity, and making sure that everybody has a right and the reality of a good job and good health care and full rights.
Do you have any ideas as to how one changes a culture?
I mean, I'll look at Christina on that as well, but I think part of it is having transgender people who are out. I mean, one of the things I learned from studying the gay rights movement is, you know, the importance of Harvey Milk in San Francisco, who was an open and out supervisor here, who really encouraged gay and lesbian people to come out, because if everybody realized that they knew somebody gay or lesbian or had somebody in their family or somebody who washed their car or was their doctor, they couldn't hold a lot of the stereotypes they have had at the time about gay and lesbian people. And I think there's relevance for transgender people in that history. The more transgender people are willing to come out, especially where they are safe and they have some protections and are able to be out, it really debunks some of the myths about who we are, because otherwise we are still stereotyped as people on Jerry Springer or people who are the butt of jokes. And the reality is we are incredible creative people, and we have many people who are just living their lives. Nobody has any idea that they're transgender or have a transgender past or history. And if those folks who have a little bit of privilege can come out and start paving a way, then that starts to change it. The other piece is getting out there in the mainstream culture. And, you know, I really appreciate some of the work that you're doing on your podcast. We need to show a diversity of trans voices and lives in our mainstream media and in a lot of the new media as well to, you know, really highlight who we are as people. And let folks know we're here to stay.
Anything else that you would like to talk about while I'm here?
I looked at Christina because, you know, she's our legal guru. And I know, you know, we've got a lot of plans for new developments and a real sense of what needs to happen over the new year and the years to come. You know, I think the one thing I would say is we are here to stay, and both as transgender people and as the Transgender Law Center and the broader transgender movement, we have incredible opportunities right now to continue to expand the understanding of gender identity and specifically transgender rights. It's a really exciting time for us, and really encourage all of your listeners to do whatever they can in their local communities to help expand civil liberties for transgender people in their area.
Well, Mason and Christina, thank you very much for talking to me, and the very best of luck with your organization in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.